Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Friday, April 22nd, and we're ready for the weekend, Kelsey.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, you look totally ready for the weekend. I don't know why. Just a smile on your face.
Yeah. Right? I'm excited about this weekend, actually, because my cousin's getting married.
Oh, wow. How cool. Where? Here in LA?
No, in San Antonio. So I'm flying there. Yeah, right after this, actually, my plane leaves.
How cool. That's why you look so happy.
Yeah, so I do that a lot. I'm just like, oh, I'm going to go back for the weekend. But it's usually a legitimate reason, like a graduation or a wedding or something important. So
right. Very cool.
So, yeah, she's getting married and be back Sunday.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it's just a short, you know, trip. But, it'll be fun.
Is she older than you, younger than you?
She's young. I think she's like 24 or something.
Really? Get married. Okay, well
that happens in Texas a lot.
Yeah. But, look, 24 is not that young.
It's
right?
not, no. I mean, it's not like stupid young. No. Yeah. I mean, they've both finished their educations. And, they're ready. They're ready.
Yeah. It's just not LA where people get married in their 40s.
Right. Well, I was talking about that the other day, actually, with a friend of mine, and I think it's just the nature of the beast out here.
Yeah.
Given the fact that a lot of people come to pursue their careers and things like that, so your focus is different.
Absolutely, and you have a lot to choose from here too. So,
well, that's the thing, and like not necessarily in the means of people to marry, in my opinion, but more so in the means of just things to do.
Yeah,
you know, back home, it's just it. I kind of think to myself, there's
nothing to do, right?
Right. I kind of think to myself, well, what else would I do besides, get married?
And raise the kids. And stuff.
Right? Like, but here, there are just like so many infinite possibilities that, it's a little different.
Yeah, it is a different place to live in LA, but most people that live here, I find, love it here. So it's pretty cool,
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you all for joining us today. We have a special guest in the studio, and we'll bring him in just a minute. We can't get through the show without talking about Prince.
I know.
We were one of the first ones to announce this, right? Like 3 minutes after it appeared here, I got a message from my engineer. He says, look, TMZ just reported there was a death at Prince's house. So... it's amazing the outpouring of love and sympathy, huh?
I know.
Wow, it's amazing. I didn't realize how many people really loved him that much. I mean, I remember when he started his career in the 70s when the disco era was going on.
Yeah.
And he was amazing, And then with Purple Rain came, he changed his style, and then he started with this more rocky style, more rock and less dance.
Right.
But like the song Purple Rain is not a dance song, but it's definitely a hit.
It is a big hit.
Right?
Yeah. Snapchat even did a tribute to him and it's everywhere. So
really? How do they do a tribute on Snapchat for
him? They just have filters that you can use, and there's like different ones every day. And
oh really?
So there was like a Purple Rain.
Yeah. I heard there's a filter on one app that's called Bob Marley.
And that's Snapchat.
Oh, that one? Yeah, okay. And it was controversial because it gives you black face and everything. I'm like, but Marley was black. What do you want? If you're going to use that filter, then you expect your face to be black.
Right.
Right? I mean, what's that? People do it more, I guess, for the dreadlocks and everything, but still, people create controversy out of everything,
I know.
I mean, come on, relax. It's just an app,
I
don't think there was any intention for anything there other than just to have fun,
Right.
And it's not fun at anybody's expense, So I think we need to relax and calm down a little bit,
I agree.
Yeah.
Chill.
Yeah, I know. So I wanted to watch the show of the guest that was here yesterday. We had Laura Bradley here, who was produced the show, The Laura Show.
Right.
And it seemed pretty cool. It's kind of like Friends, but,
it
more modern,
it has that vibe, yeah.
Yeah, it has three guys, three girls. They're all beautiful. and things like that, you know. So
did you get to watch it?
No, but what I meant is I really wanted to watch it because I'm curious now,
right,
to see, since she both produced it and wrote it and acts in it and stuff,
right,
you know, so.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But that's amazing, huh, for someone young to be able to do that and everything, you know. And
and it sounds amazing. Like on a really shoestring budget too.
Yeah. I mean, her mom was a videographer on the show, you know, so.
Yeah, and yeah. The actors all work for free, so.
Right, yeah. I know. Well, that's how it is in this town, folks. You better accept it that if you want to get into entertainment, you're going to have to do some free work too, right?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people do, yeah, but it gets you exposure, you know. It gets you some examples of things that you can do.
Right.
Yeah. So, so Prince, we mourn him as well, I guess. I just don't understand the people that are like, oh, my heart is broken, my this, my that. Come on, you don't know the guy, you know? It's not like your family, you know? I mean, I can say, you know, it's sad, everything. But people die all the time, you know? And
yeah.
You know, so, I don't know. It's not, it's just the person that sings, you know? It's not like a god or anything, so.
I know, I think that's the thing
we
with
love
celebrity,
our celebrities,
though.
Right.
I mean, people really feel like they get to know
right.
You.
Like they know them, right?
As a person,
I guess, yeah. That explains it, though. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, because otherwise I can't explain why people are like, oh my God, you know, blah, blah, blah. My heart, my prayers, my this, my that. It's like, come on, you know. We can just acknowledge this and speak about his career and the contribution to music and everything. You know, but no tears. I mean, come on, you know. Tears are reserved for loved ones, I think. What do I know? Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So I got a new bike rack. I'm going to... see if that works for me. I'm just like a little paranoid about bike racks. I always am afraid it's going to like get loose and fall off.
Oh my gosh,
the freeway.
That is a little paranoid.
Right?
Yeah, I hear you.
But they don't fall off. I mean, you know, most people ride them at 90 miles an hour and nothing happens.
It'll be fine, yeah.
Yeah, so I got one and so I'm definitely planning on taking a lot more bike rides. There's a book I want to get called Bike Rides in LA, you know, and it's
oh, really?
Got like all these like bike paths and places that you didn't know about.
That's cool. Well, it is so fast.
I know, but I'm looking at some of them. It's like 25 miles. I mean, are you serious? I could probably barely do a couple, you know. I go from Santa Monica to Venice and back, you know.
Oh my God, you know, you might be surprised though.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, because it's you know, obviously it's way different than like walking or running.
Right.
It's so much easier. So yeah, like there have been times when I've gone bike riding and I've like looked down and I've gone like 12 or 13 miles or something.
Really?
Yeah, and it doesn't, I mean, of course this isn't like rough terrain.
Right, right.
You know, so it would be a little different in that case. This is pretty straight, steady level ground.
Right,
but
still,
you know, it goes fast.
Yeah, I know. But there's some nice places to go, you know, on a bike. So we'll see. Excuse me. I guess everything is... It's elementary, so we're going to get to our guest right now. Oh, wow. Well, welcome to the show. We have Michael Molan in the studio. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks.
Of course. Michael is a writer that I met at the LA Book Festival, the Los Angeles Times Festival of Books is what they call it, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So that was a couple of weeks ago, and I saw you write books for young adults. And it was very interesting to me. I mean, I wish I was a young adult so I could read your books. But let me ask you this.
They skew up to adults, too.
You can still read it.
So that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. I mean, is this like, I mean, would this be readable to me if I wanted to read it?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's not like condescending to kids or anything.
No, definitely not.
So what
not.
Makes it, what makes a book a kid's book?
I think with the young adult genre, which we didn't have when we were growing up, and so it's a hugely popular genre.
Really? We didn't have that when we were growing up?
No, they didn't call it that. And so we would
read,
like,
what ages is it for, the young
adults? It's sort of teenagers. They say, like, you know, 13 to 18.
Oh, okay. So that's more like kit.
And it's like sort of the Hunger Games and like those ones that they make in a movie that started out as books.
Oh, I gotcha.
Those made that genre very popular. And so, like everything, the industry gave it a name, the young adult. And so then it becomes just the kid, it becomes much more popular thing, especially after the movies are made, and then right. the books sell even more, and things like that. But there's a whole bunch of, you know, these young adult books, they skew all the way up to adult. One really? Of the things, too, that's like a little bit of a, I mean, personally for me, for there's a bit of a turnoff, is that the young adult genre has a lot of romance in it. My
yeah,
books
right.
do not.
okay.
And so well, sometimes, that's a, yeah, sometimes that's a gender thing, too. Like some of, like, you know, older women, like in their book clubs and stuff like that, like they will actually read young adult novels even, you know.
Wow, that's interesting.
Because they're super popular.
Yeah, and there's a lot of adventure in it and things like that. You know, it makes you sort of like miss your childhood, right? Reminisce, kind of go back and everything.
Right.
So now, did you make a conscious decision to make young adult books, or is that the way it came out?
It just sort of came out that way. I actually spent years as a copywriter at Disney in their licensed product division.
Oh, okay.
And this, the first book that I put out myself is Tailspins. It's the collection of three twisted fairy tales. And that came out of my work at Disney. It's a kind of a weird story, but when I was at the product division, the creative team from the Japanese office came to our creative group here in Burbank, and they wanted, you're familiar with Tim Burton's A Nightmare Before Christmas.
Right. Sure.
It was a picture book before a movie.
He
wrote a picture book and illustrated a picture book in rhyming verse, and then they made that into the movie. So it was years and years ago. But then these guys came and they said the product in Japan for Nightmare Before Christmas is so popular, like they can't keep it on the shelves. And so they had this idea that they would, you know, what if Jack Skellington went to the other holiday lands and we wrote new stories? And so our creative group was like, oh, that's great, but we just can't do that in our own office. And it's Tim Burton and he owns it. But then I was sort of somewhat jaded at the end of my career there.
Right. So
I said to myself, like, it's not going to change my paycheck any. I still get the same every other Thursday. It's going to look
same.
So I went back to my desk and I actually wrote two sequels to The Nightmare Before Christmas using the rhyming verse that he used, A Nightmare Before Easter and then A Midwinter Nightmare Scream, which is a Shakespearean parody, and Midsummer Night's Dream about Valentine's Day.
Oh, wow.
And so then they got passed around, and it was like, oh, this is great, but we can't do anything with this. We can't do, you know. And then I actually got a meeting with Tim Burton, and he approved both stories and was like, oh, this is great.
Wow, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, can he use,
Disney
like, characters?
But never published them.
Yeah.
So they never happened. And so then the first story in Tailspins I wrote as a follow-up to that. Assuming that those were going to get published, I wrote the story of Creepy, the eighth dwarf that nobody knew about. I left Disney first, and then not that Disney. Some people ask me that about, oh, did you get in trouble with Disney? Like, Disney doesn't own Snow White, it's public domain. It's
okay,
exactly.
So that's what
I would
is,
be
right.
bad if I wrote the story while I still was working there, which I did not. I left first, and then I wrote the story about Creepy.
You broke up with him first.
I broke up with him first. It's not you, it was me.
No cheating.
We can still be friends. Actually, I still freelance for them, so yes, we're still friends.
But the eighth eighth dwarf, Creepy. I mean, that's like
that's so funny
thing,
to me.
Right?
So I put that one out thinking it was going to be my original follow up, and then that just sort of sat there, and we were waiting, and Disney never published the Nightmare stuff, and so I figured I'm just going to go on my own, and so I wrote two more Twisted Fairy Tales using that same rhyming verse format. And for that same audience, you say, you know, like a young adult, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas is very popular with like youngs and teens, but also adults. Like, so, and that's what I was going for from the get-go.
I see.
To do that. And so I wrote two more. The first two stories were, I published them as like 99-cent ebooks just on, you know, to get my feet wet. Like, what is this whole, because the whole publishing industry was so
changing.
And, and still, it's just very crazy and just kind of on its ear. And so I put those two out there, and bloggers took to them and reviewed them nicely, and it was kind of cool. And so then I did a Kickstarter campaign actually to write I wrote the third story and then to print and publish the first book, and that's how I started the publishing company. So when you go to the booth at the LA Times Festival, it's actually my publishing company.
I see. Okay. And it's called Geminite, right?
Yeah.
Geminite Press. You guys can find out more by going to Geminite, given the spelling
G-E-M-I and then K-N-I-G-H-T.
Right. So it's like Gemmy and Knight. It's like Gemini and a place on, play on words, and I love that. It's amazing. So how did you come up with the name?
I have twins, and so Gemini, I have a boy-girl twins who are 14.
Oh.
And then when I was little, I was really into knights, and like I would draw knight helmets and the heraldry and stuff like that. Like,
wow.
I was just like a goofy artistic hobby of mine.
Very cool. So now, I mean, obviously you've drawn a lot on stuff you read in your childhood, right? Early on. So now tell me, what is the difference in writing for young adults as it is for adults? I mean, have you written for adults too?
I have a couple of things in the works. Are not done and published yet, but it's actually becoming, like, as I independently publish and try to get an agent and try to, like, you know, send a letter out to get this maybe more traditionally published, it's kind of not a detriment, but it is kind of weird, like, because they want you, obviously, like an actor or something, they want you to be sort of pigeonholed in this, oh, he's a young adult author.
Yeah, right.
The other book that you saw at the festival that I have out is, like, about a little fourth grader. It's a middle grade novel.
Oh, I see.
And he's a superhero by accident, like, sort of thing. It's just a funny sci-fi, like, adventure story, and kids dig it at the festival. You know, it has a lot to do with the cover art, which I'll talk about later. I didn't do that, so I love bragging about the cover art.
Yeah,
I didn't
right? do it. But it's so
the
important, self-promo, right?
Stuff, yeah. Oh yeah.
The cover is so.
But I'm all over the place with writing for different genres. Now I'm working on this adult thing, and oh, maybe I shouldn't do that. Maybe I should stick to the kid thing because I go to elementary schools. Like, I was here last year, and like, well, the new book, you guys can't read it because you're only in fourth grade.
Oh my gosh.
I tend not to dumb down anything.
That's exactly what I was going to ask. You don't dumb it down, right? I mean, you just the English is probably easier and simpler and stuff, but. I would imagine the plots are not as intricate as for an adult, right?
Yeah, sometimes. And the Twisted Fairy Tales is a good example because they are from known entities. I published this Tailspins as a young adult, and I find year after year, like, it was required summer reading at a middle school, like 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and I went into Pasadena, where I'm from.
Oh my gosh, what I used to hate. I was
this,
like,
one was fun. The kids dug it.
Like, yeah, I'm sure. But then, I would have loved that to be required summer reading, not like A Tale of Two Cities. Yeah, right. Or something. Yeah, I was like,
I know.
Spark Notes, where are you? Come to me.
These read like Spark Notes, I guess. But then I've noticed at the book festivals, the parents come, and then I will do, like, the little Rocket Boy book at the elementary schools, but I'll have the Tailspins, and the parents will ask, like, oh, like, what about this? Because the kids are very interested in it. And when I think about it, I'm like, well, there's nothing inappropriate in it. The language, the vocabulary is such, they're going to ask you what this word means, but, you know, who has a problem with that? Like, you know,
right,
the
right.
Gonna,
that's true.
Get there. So the stories are, and so I've seen this Tailspins actually start to skew younger and younger. But then I'll still get, like, you know, adult book bloggers like, oh, I discovered this and it's really funny and great. And
yeah,
and so
very
it's kind
cool.
of all over the place, yeah.
For those of you just joining us, we're talking to Michael Mullen, has written a few young adult books. And I did see the little graphic novel, right? That was for fourth graders, you said?
The graphic novel is actually the Creepy the Eighth Dwarf, the story. And the one you're thinking of is just a straight middle grade novel, but the cover has a very comic book look to it. It's a very vibrant comic book with a little superhero guy.
I see.
And that's a novel. That's a novel for what they call middle grade. That's like the genre, but the hero's in fourth grade, so third through fifth.
Yeah.
And it's kind of.
Well, it's amazing. I mean, it's got to be a challenge to write for fourth graders, right?
It is. I think I was working on those kinds of books when my twins were growing up, and I have a boy and a girl, the twins, and so it's like my own little mini focus group at the dinner table.
That works. Yeah, that would be a huge advantage, right? Because you forget, I feel like, as you get older.
And I was very involved in their school all the way from kindergarten, all the, like, I was there because I work from home, and so I was, you know, picking them up and knew their friends and their friends' parents and their teachers and stuff like that. And you do, you sort of absorb how kids talk and stuff like that, and so the worst thing you could possibly do, and my kids will back me up on this, is to be the adult, like, trying to sound cool. So you just have to, you know, so it's not do that.
So you have to tread carefully.
It's just sort of, and the humor part comes a little bit more naturally to me, and so you just what's funny here, and my kids were good. They were good audiences too.
Obviously, and plus you're in an environment of kids around, you know, it's easier.
I used to be a teacher too, so I was,
Oh, really? I come from a family of teachers.
Oh, cool. I was a preschool teacher and college.
I see. Okay, so it's easy for
college.
You to
college. Oh, that's a big jump.
Yeah.
My shtick about it is that they're two positions I found disconcertingly similar.
Really?
Right. Oh my gosh.
That's funny.
I was probably amongst that group in college. Well, see, it's so funny because I'm all like, I'm like Facebook friends with all of my like old professors and stuff now from college.
Really?
And it's amazing. I love them. Like, you know, when your specialized group, like my broadcast journalism professors. I mean, I only had two through my whole thing, right? So, yeah, they'll message me and be like, we always knew you would do something like this.
How cool it is to be in touch with the teachers.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm one of those type that always like looks everybody up.
I'm not in touch with any of my students. I'd have to remember their names first.
Both of my professors.
That was a long time ago.
You have to understand, too, that, you know, each special group or whatever, I mean, for the two-year stint I was in the journalism school, there was only like 15 of us.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I mean,
and it wasn't that long ago for you, Kelsey, right? Yeah. So that's the thing, you know. I mean, I went to college so long ago, there probably half of them are not alive anymore.
Right.
You know?
Right. It's a little different.
Yeah, I know. But at the same time, I know I had a couple of mentors at school, like in my marketing department. The head of the marketing department was also my professor. And he was like, I just looked up to him. I loved just going into his office and talking to him, you know.
Aww.
An older man and stuff. But he's probably not around anymore. But I remember noting to myself that it's so important to have good teachers, you know. They're the ones that bring out the best in you, whether you're young or even in college, I think, right?
I agree. And I have, with the twins going in high school, going to college is like obviously right on the horizon. And my wife and I are doing a lot of that with our close friends, like same age kids and stuff, and talking a lot about that. And, you know, these big name schools and, you know, where do you apply and stuff like that. And I always go back to what you just said. It'd be like, you know what, you get a school that's not as like hip and, you know, expensive,
right?
But if you connect with a couple of teachers within your major, within your thing, like that's the life changing thing.
Exactly, and that's what's important. I mean, many times, you know, unless you go to the Ivy League schools, people don't really look specifically at what school you got your degree from. They never ask for proof or anything. You know, they just kind of like believe it. But yeah, I mean, and I still say this. Obviously, you listen to our shows, but. Yeah, I do believe that taking student loans is a choice. You know, it's not something that you have to do. And that's why I'm just not happy with the students that complain that they're stuck with debt. What I do complain about is maybe they're not told what the ramifications of it is, you know?
I think that's most things
applicable
in life, you know, any 30-year-old.
Yeah, you know?
You go back to be like, well, if I only knew this when I was 19.
That's true, right? Yeah. But I think it's the responsible of counselors and teachers to let students know that you can get a degree without spending, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, you know?
To an extent, though, like, if you're going to go to medical school or something, obviously.
Yeah, that's different. But then you're aware of what's going on. But just to get a bachelor's degree, you know, makes no sense to me at all, you know, to spend that kind of money. Most people don't use, or not most, but let's say some people don't use their degrees for their career anyway, you know, they go into something else and stuff. Even law students.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So,
totally.
You know, yeah. So we're talking to Michael Mullen. He's written a few books for young adults. You can go to the website and find out more about him and the books at Geminight.com. That's GEMIKNIGHT.com. You can find out about the books and everything. Let's talk specifically about the books. The latest one you have is called Simon.
Yes.
What's this about? I mean, it's got a skull on the front of it. It's got like a time code as though we're looking from a video camera.
Tell us
a little bit about the book.
Yeah, Simon is a modern-day retelling of Shakespeare's Hamlet.
And oh, my gosh.
Simon is a 19-year-old film student whose father died, and his mother just recently, oddly and really kind of weirdly, married his uncle.
Really?
That's bizarre.
Whoa.
And so that is...
Is that how Hamlet happened?
That is how Hamlet
happened.
Really? So in Hamlet, the king dies, and then the uncle marries the queen and becomes the king.
Oh, okay.
And then Hamlet sees the ghost of his father... who tells him, my brother murdered me and took my crown, and so you need to avenge me and kill your uncle.
Wow.
And so that is exactly what happens in Simon.
Right, so it's modern day, yeah.
So Simon went to the funeral and refuses to go to the wedding because he's, you know, mad and a little bit grossed out by it, as we would be.
Yeah.
And then his best friend from high school started a filmmaking, like a video production company, like tape weddings, tape, you know,
sure,
baptisms and stuff like that. And so when he comes home, Simon has to come home for a few days, which is the entire extent of the book. He has to come home for a few days and sign some inheritance papers and, you know, split what from his dad's death. And his friend texts him and says, you got to come over here. Like, he shot the wedding that he didn't go to. And in the wedding, the ghost image shows up in the video.
Oh, wow.
Okay, that is so cool.
And so he texts a screenshot of the thing to Simon, who, when he's back home, the screenshot on his phone comes to life as like a video clip and then gives him the message that. And I say that it's funny because it's Hamlet and Shakespeare. I say even at the book fairs and stuff like that, I'll say, spoiler alert, you know, pretty much everyone dies. Yeah. And I've taken a lot of liberties, too, to make it more modern. The book actually opens on the network news, like a CNN kind of
news
on the murder, the mass murder in a mansion in Massachusetts. So it's the ongoing sensational, as you know, network news will do, like for the 24-hour feed or whatever, sensationalized coverage of this, you know, breaking news. There's, you know, five people found dead in this mansion, and during the book we go back to that story.
What's interesting? I mean, you bring up the book with the uncle and everything. Did you know that in Judaism, if you practice religious Judaism, if your husband dies, then yes, you have to marry his brother unless he lets you out of the marriage, out of the obligation.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
I mean,
this is like very ancient, right? But
that's like Hollywood. He gets like right of
refusal. Exactly, you know? But yeah, I mean, that's the thing, you know? I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean,
wait,
in every religion,
does anybody do that?
Probably the religious people do, yeah. Yeah, but what I'm telling you is that, you know, every religion's got all these weird things, you know, and people don't understand. These things started in ancient times, you know.
Every religion has
They don't apply anymore, right?
Yeah.
Because in ancient times, there was no one else but your husband.
Yeah.
It's like small town and wherever.
Exactly. And it was for the woman, so someone would take care of her.
Exactly.
That was the whole point. It's not like, but still the view is as though the woman is property or something, you know.
Right.
Someone to take care of and all that.
And now
but
it's like, yeah, we do our own thing. Like,
right.
Please.
It used to be like that. But now a woman can take care of herself, you know. Some women actually pay alimony to their husband.
Oh my God, I know. Like, I know, I actually have a friend who knows that. I'm not
really
kidding. I know.
those are things you need to keep in mind too. Like exactly what you're saying is that if you take something that's an ancient text and you want to make it modern, it's not just a game of like matching the lines and matching the scenes and stuff like that. You have to really reshape characters. And I've gotten in reviews and stuff like that, like that's been a point that people have made, that the Simon's mother and then his ex-girlfriend, his high school girlfriend, who's like the Ophelia character, are very strong and well-rounded and contemporary.
Oh, that's good. Yeah,
as opposed to, because it's a little bit too easy to say, oh, well, back in the day, you know, these characters were all just sort of two-dimensional, so that's great. I can have those written by lunch, you know.
Right.
Exactly.
And if you don't want to do it that way. First and foremost, I always say that I would like Simon to just stand on its own, and that's how it's been received, luckily. And then people, they'll either know or they won't. I mean, the cover is kind of a giveaway with it, to be
right.
or not to be on it. But then, you know, I've like never read Hamlet, and so they'll read this. Oh, this is great. And then they'll actually go give Hamlet a
try. Really? Wow, very cool. So enticing young readers to actually look at Shakespeare.
Sure,
stuff.
Yeah.
See, I never had that do that for me, so that's why I never read Shakespeare. Somehow through school, it was never presented to me, so I never learned to appreciate it. Yeah,
wow.
Believe it or not, not in high school and not in college, you know, never.
And I'm admittedly not a Shakespeare geek at all. I'm a Hamlet geek.
Really?
Sure. And then, you know, I've only read whatever, the smattering of a few of the more famous plays and, you know, sonnets in school, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I'm by no means a, you know, all over.
Right.
But then I get the, you know, when people like this are like, oh, which one are you doing next?
I'm like, yeah. Well,
yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
Hey, maybe it'll be like your thing, though.
I know. That's more than half the battle is finding your thing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So that would be kind of cool. You could do like modern, it could be a branding thing. You could do modern, you know, renditions
it's
of famous.
I'm just thinking out loud
no, it is. For you.
My wife is actually a marketing executive at
the
cable
network.
Oh,
perfect.
Really?
So I'm actually working on a Simon, like a, I don't know, anthology series, like a TV thing.
That'll
like an
be
HBO
nice.
Or something like that to transfer. But then she's saying, like, right, and then season two would be like Macbeth. And
yeah, that would be, yeah.
And I'm like, I know. So you have going back to the little superhero, the fourth yeah. grader, like, leave me alone.
I know, right?
You get your work cut out
right,
for
exactly,
you, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So when you came out with the book, you decided to start your own publishing company. What was the thinking behind that? Is it because it's hard to find a publisher or...
It definitely is. It's
I've heard that.
You can describe the scene of you submit a manuscript to a publisher and then it sits on a slush pile and it's like, you know, the same with all kinds of entertainment business type things. But that's not, like, you hear that story and that's not even really the story. You're really sending your manuscript to an agent and it sits on his or her slush pile.
Right.
And then if they like it, then they're like, okay, yeah, I kind of like this, but I want you to change it all around before I could even
before
put it
even
in the
goes
other
to
slush
the
pile.
Editor. Wow.
And so there's this whole layers, and I've started it later in life. I think if I were younger, I would, you know, I went to graduate school for creative writing in Boston. The way that it came about with like the Tim Burton thing and putting that ebook out there, self-publishing, was just more of a natural progression because I did think that the other things were going to be out, and so then I would have sort of a I don't know what you would say, but like a little bit of a wave to ride into the new properties and stuff like that. Right. And when that didn't happen, it was really just a, I don't know if it's like my own sort of narcissism and control freakishness or whatever that
yeah, I mean,
started
I don't
to
think
do
it's
it.
That.
And it was like to then go back and say, oh, you know, and you know, that said, I still do send query letters to agents and stuff like that. With regards to Simon, is an easier sell. The
sure.
other ones are, you know, like I try to sell Tailspins into somebody and talk to them about, oh, you know, we don't do poetry. And I'm like, no, it's not poetry, trust me. You know, but there's always some explanatory thing, and that's not what they want. They
right.
want to be like,
you
this
want something
is oh,
straightforward,
it's,
right?
You know,
right?
Yeah, it's the future, and the government is really not nice, and, you know, there's you know, a band of kids, like, okay.
Very and cool. So you really wanted to get into creative writing.
Yes.
Was that early on in your life?
I think so. I did a lot in high school, but then I went to college as an economics major, and
that's so funny. It's like two different worlds.
Yeah.
You know?
Because I just thought of it as a hobby, and then by the time like my end of my sophomore year, I had switched to English, and then I was actually going to go to film school, which is a little bit of what Simon is, a little bit of my naive 19-year-old self, and Simon for sure. And then I decided to do creative writing instead. So I have a master's in fine arts in creative writing.
Wow, very cool.
And that's where I met my wife. And
in school?
Right.
Oh,
we're talking about marriage. We got married out east and then came here.
There you go. Oh, my
and
gosh.
I was trying to think how old I was.
I know. My mom's going to be trying to marry.
27, I think.
My mom's going to try to marry me off to all the groomsmen.
Right.
Like, I'm like, oh, my God, Mom, please. Not my type. Not my type.
That's funny.
At all.
Yeah. So what is your type? We were talking about that yesterday, right? You said she likes businessmen, right? That's what you said.
They're my type. Yeah. I think it's because my dad's a businessman.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah.
I adore my dad. So, yeah. It's that's my type.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. It always has been.
Because the guest yesterday likes the pretty boys, right? So.
And I'm like, oh, no.
That's for Kelsey.
Not for me. I want the rugged. I mean, I'm from a ranch.
That's
I need
true.
Someone who can, like, chop wood and, you know, like... Not be a sissy about
and kill
it.
A kitchen, a chicken.
Yeah. Like, girls got to eat, you know? I need someone who can, like, barbecue.
Exactly. And carry a gun and a shotgun and scare everybody around.
Exactly.
Well, I don't know if you'll find them here, Kelsey, but
I know.
You'll have to go back to Texas for that.
Well,
probably,
I'm not
right?
looking right now.
Yeah. I mean, in L.A., we get a lot of pretty boys, but
don't we? Cowboys. I know. But we have a lot of business people, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And cowboys. Too.
Yeah, and I'm not
city
like a
cowboy.
Yeah, I'm not like a rugged camping type. Good God, no.
Right.
I'm like a, you know, I'm a montage dweller. Okay, but I'm definitely I like to, you know, I don't like a pretty boy. I'll
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Well, to each his own. You know, we all have different tastes.
Yeah.
And stuff. Well, this is very cool. So, so Simon is a modern day thing, and. So, but the story sort of like what play stays close to the Hamlet storyline.
Yes, and all the like major plot points and things. It just keeps, but it does have a what I'm told is a you know an actual contemporary bent to it. And so when if there was anything that clearly, you know, wouldn't work, then that was part of the challenge, was to sit down and say, how does this work and how does this... And then there are other little things, too, like the film that he's shooting. He's home for a few days, but he really just wants to get back to school. Like, he does, you know, doesn't want to deal with this family thing and his new stepfather, uncle, and, like, gross. And, and so he wants to get back to school. He's a project and that he's filming and that he wrote, and it's a couple of, like, mobsters, kind of like a Sopranos thing, and they're digging a grave for someone that the mob killed. And so that's the gravedigger thing in Hamlet. There's a famous scene there. And so then that comes up, and that scene of his film actually plays out with, like, a kind of a 19-year-old film student, naive, like, surprise ending and stuff like
that.
So how many times did you have to read Hamlet to get all of the scenes paralleled? That's what I wanted to know.
Reading and listening and... but it's over time. So this was actually, this actually took a long time to write, but not really? Just because I was just working on other things.
Yeah,
and I finally, a friend of mine who works as my editor and sort of a business manager type, was, you know, finally get to a certain point and she was like, all right, do this one and just focus on this one.
Right.
And like I was saying before we got on air, like, this is my old neighborhood, and I actually wrote most of Simon and most of Tailspins at a coffee shop that no longer exists, but it's right down the street from where we are right now.
Very cool. So that was some time ago then, right?
It was. It was this one actually came out, published only last year at the Los Angeles Times Book Festival in 2015, was the debut of Simon.
Oh, okay.
But it had been worked on for years. Like, when my kids were in, like, fourth and fifth grade, we lived far enough away that I would drive them, drop them off at school, and then I would go to the coffee shop
and just sit
there
and do that.
As opposed to driving
away. Yeah. Very cool, yeah. That's, now, is it hard for you to stay... stay focused on writing, like, every day, because you have to be a self-starter to do that, right?
Yes, and that is what my, sometimes I, you know, do the interviews and people to ask me what the biggest challenges are, and my biggest challenges are a little bit on the juvenile side. They're time management things there.
Yeah, right.
And
yeah.
Now that my kids are in high school and don't need me as much anymore, we, of course, got a puppy.
Yeah.
Right?
To take up more of our time.
Yeah. He's awesome, but...
Gotta fill that void.
Wow. We're joined by Michael Mullen. He's written a few young adult novels. One of them is Tailspins, which is twisted fairy tales, right?
Yes.
And so which ones do you have? You have Snow White here?
Yes, there's the first one is Creepy, the eighth dwarf that nobody knew about. The other seven lock him in the basement because he's weird. And from there, he affects the Snow White story that we all thought we knew.
Yeah, wow.
And then the second story is an original fairy tale where I just borrowed elements from other ones that are sort of just mentioned in there. So it's like a fairy tale world.
Yeah.
And it's about a teenage princess who hires a witch to get revenge on a mean girl who's picking on her at school.
Wow.
And it does not go well.
They're like bullying and stuff.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very nice. So you're bringing it to contemporary topics and things like
that.
Yeah,
there's
well.
Actually a for teachers, once this was that required summer reading at the middle school, I put together a curriculum of discussion questions and writing exercises that deal with the anti-bullying themes and stuff like that.
Oh,
so
that's
there's
great.
A whole brochure, and so teachers, and they pick up the brochure at the festivals and things like that, like where I met you. And I'm actually going to Arroyo High School next month. And we're going to do Tailspins and Simon, and then there's a couple of other schools too that I can't remember the names of the schools, but we go there with the, you know, it's either a book fair or it's just an author visit.
Yeah.
And it's nice. It's cool because the kids are really engaged. They're really something new for them to like.
Yeah, that's true.
In the classroom and stuff.
So do you travel around the country and stuff?
I haven't branched out that much. I'm starting to. It's just all dependent, just kind of keeping it in check. I did a festival just like the LA Times about a month and a half ago at University of Arizona. It's a Tucson Festival of Books.
Oh, nice.
And it was huge and
really,
and really nice. But it was the first time I ever did one that was not local for me.
Right.
And just like, you know, packed the car and, you know, got the hotel.
Okay.
It was a little crazy, but it was cool. And like, people were great. And there was a Shakespeare connection too. It just so happened that the Shakespeare's first folio, which is the original published manuscript from 1603, where they put all the plays together, and then all the 1630, not 1603. they put it together, so it's this big giant book, and it's doing a U.S. tour, and it stops once in every state.
Yeah.
And that weekend of the Tucson Festival, the University of Arizona had it.
So really?
I was able to go see it, and they had it open to the To Be or Not To Be page, like, oh, in the glass case.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
So it was fun. I think of it as like, oh, I see this big thing, and then you walk in there, and it's just like they have a museum on campus, and so it was just this room in the museum.
Right.
I was like, oh, that's cool. I was like, can I take a picture? And the guard's like, yeah, sure, whatever. So I did. Flash photography or something like that.
But oh, yeah.
They were fine, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a good festival.
No one ever listens to those signs.
I know,
anyways.
Right? I was being nice and asking.
Right? I know. I would just be like,
that's right.
Click it real quick.
Apologize after.
Right? I know.
Wow. So, and then you have Rocket Boy, The Return of Megaton. What's that about?
That is the middle grade novel, and it is about a smart fourth grader who becomes an intergalactic superhero by accident. This alien team, alien girl, and these two robots, they come down, and they're trying to recruit Skylar as the little boy, and they're trying to recruit... they've selected Skylar's big brother, who's the star of all the high school sports teams. He's like a big, muscly jock guy.
Okay.
And there's a mix-up, and Skylar gets the gig as the superhero, and because he's smart, it turns out he's actually good at it.
Wow.
So parents Very really cool. dig that, and like the kids do, too. Like, that's a big deal, too. Like, the kids always come over to the booth because of the art. Like, for my connections at Disney, I only work with, you know, former Disney artists, drew like the comic book and all my covers and stuff like that.
Really, very
nice. So then
nice.
I blow those up as a signage, and that's a big deal at those festivals.
It is a big deal, and the cover is important. People don't understand sometimes.
Yeah.
Don't judge a book by its cover, but it's not true, because it's like the first impression you get. You know, just like meeting a person for the first time. You know, if they're attractive, you're gonna check it out.
It's usually important, and that particular cover, it's like clockwork. Like any boy who's like, you know, 10 or below will just
they're attracted
over,
to it,
they'll
right?
come right over to that book, and it's blown up big on the sign, and like holding their parents' hands, like dragging them over to the booth, like, what's this?
You know?
that's true. I mean, it caught my eye because I love graphics and stuff like that, you know, so it's very cool. And what about this cover? Also,
another former Disney artist, it's actually, the concept is mine. Describe it, it has like a To Be or Not To Be speech on the cover that's sort of pulled out graphically, like you might see in an advertisement or something like
that.
And then the letters that spell out the word Simon are called out in red, like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, and so the concept was mine, and I always joke about like the artists that I have befriended and colleagues over the years, they like working with me because I used to be an artist and I studied that all the way up into college.
Uh-huh.
So I can draw a bad rendition of a good concept and then give it to
sure.
them.
And then
I'll say to them, like, you know, here, just like this, or we're totally different, like whatever, and then they'll send me something back, like I joke with this cover, he sent me back like 2 days later, sent back, look just like this, and I was like, right, we're gonna go with yours as opposed to mine that looked like a bad greeting card or something, you know?
so what do you suggest, what do you advise to beginning writers? I mean, should everybody start their own publishing company? No, right?
No, I don't think so. I think that there are definitely ways to do it online. I've never done these like with through Amazon. There's like Create Space, and there's lots of different ways you can find to publish your book.
Right.
And, you know, the advice that I always say to people starting out, like whether they have a book or not, definitely first and foremost, like learn the craft, like learn the language.
The story,
language,
right?
Yeah, and, you know, have people who have no agenda or interest in you read it and give you honest feedback and stuff like that, and try to, and then, you know, make a good cover for sure.
Yeah.
And then
have a proofread for crying out loud, you know?
All of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But I've done it a different way, and I think that, you know, if you were starting a restaurant business, or if you were starting like, oh, I'm going to open up this little shop here, like, you know, in any kind of business, you have to put some money up front. You have to invest money. And if you're going to open a restaurant and think that you're going to, you know, turn a profit in 2 years, like, you're crazy.
Yeah,
it
it's not
going to
happen, right?
And that's sort of how I'm taking the writing and the publishing thing. Like, you can hear, you know, the stories of, like, the book The Martian that they made the movie from.
Right.
That was a self-published ebook.
Oh, really?
It just took off.
And wow.
And so, like, you hear those stories, and so then people just publish their ebook, and then they just sort of sit by the computer and wait for it to take off. It's like, well, it doesn't really work.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work. People don't come
so
to you,
have
right?
To, right, and you have to, so you have to make that investment, and that's what gets you a better cover. That's what gets you signage on the booth and something that's, you know, you will make that somebody will approach that and say, and then I tell people too, that you got to work on your pitches. Like if somebody says, what's this book about? And they're standing there with their $20 bill and they're asking about your book.
You
and
better know
15 minutes later, you still haven't like really given them the story. Like, you're not going to make that sale. You
know? That's true. Absolutely. Michael Mullen, how can people get a hold of you if they want to make contact?
Gemini.com is the best. All the contact information is on there. So it's the GEMIKNIGHT. That's the company, and that's the best way for sure.
Cool, and people can probably Google you, Michael Mullen, M-U-L-L-I-N, and you guys can find out more information. So on your website, you have books. You have a blog also, right? What do you blog
I'm
about?
The worst blogger ever.
Really?
I know. It's like all the time. Like, oh, you need to blog.
I know. I don't understand.
Write down. I'm going to work on a book. Like, so I'm bad.
Yeah, exactly.
So
why do people take it on?
I do like a newsletter. Like, that's my
that's
my
nice.
Thing. But
okay.
It's like once a month, and it's like super
simple. Yeah.
But even that, it's just sort of like says, oh, I did the LA Times Book Festival, and then you guys are going to be on the newsletter.
Yeah, awesome.
But that's the thing about a blog is people expect you to write all the time, you know? And then I'm like, why would you commit yourself to something like this, you know?
I mean, it's supposed to, like, oh, keep it going. But then I don't, like, I'm not going to do a blog about writing. It's like, and so I don't, you know.
Very cool. Michael, congratulations
Thank
on
you.
All the books.
Thanks so much.
And do you have a new one coming out soon? Or?
I'm actually working on Rocket Boy 2 because it is a series. And so that one is underway. And then I have the adult one that's like a serial killer, like thriller kind of thing.
Oh, I
so
love those guys.
That one's been like plodding along. Yeah.
Like, you and the rest of America.
So
yeah.
I think that's what it means. That needs to be, you know, explored because I do keep going back to it. And then I am doing this Simon as a script thing. So we're
great. And are you going to be at any more shows? Can people meet you if they want to? I see there's something in San Francisco, right? I mean, are you going to?
I'm not doing that one in June, but I will next year. Like, I have my ducks in a row to get that one done. But there is the Bay.
Oh, so this is from last year.
Like
Okay, very cool. So you guys definitely check it out, see more, and get Michael's books. I mean, for your kids, for anybody, really, you know?
Yep.
And, I'm very curious to see really how you write for younger audience. And Simon is a pretty big book, too, you know? For younger audience, that's a pretty big book, you know? And you know, but so which is the required reading? The Tailspin?
Tailspins was, really? A few summers ago. And then we're going to do it again this summer. And it's 6th, 7th, and 8th grade reading that one. And
very
that's where
cool.
my kids went to school. And so that's how I knew, like, the English department and chair and stuff like that. But then she recently circled back to me to say, you know, those kids have graduated on. We're going to do it again. And so that's cool.
Very nice. Michael Mullen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you
for All the best
me.
To you.
Really cool yes.
Everybody, please go out and get the books and everything. Kelsey, have a great weekend.
Thanks.
Yes, take
enjoy.
Care, everybody.
Have a nice flight.
Thanks for
sticking around for the show.
Of course.
You get
and thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you on Monday.
Bye, guys.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.